Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I am proud to bring you the Worldwide Religion of Love, hosted by Michael and Diane Duncan. Greetings and welcome, Michael and Diane. Happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, greetings, Hercules. Happy Thanksgiving. And here's Diane to greet you also.
Hi, Hercules. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone, to Nick and Gerald and all of your family too, Hercules, Athena, and also, of course, we don't want to forget anyone of Gerald's. He has a son, and of course, Carol is there. So here's Michael.
Thank you very much, and I will leave you to your show. If you need me, just holler. I'm only a voice away.
Okay, Hercules, thank you so much, and thank you for this opportunity to really be able to share the Worldwide Religion of Love as expressed through the sixth revelation, and that's Diane and myself, and of course a little bit of Alex, and the gods that reside in our home and that come to us and speak to us and guide us. We're so grateful for them. And that's the sixth revelation is expressing the Worldwide Religion of Love, brought to us by Gabriel and Aphrodite under the auspices of the Local Universe Father and Local Universe Mother, and also included in that this process of transformation bringing us to a new golden age is Lord Maitreya and his consort Rose Estelle. They are helping to transform society, transform our daily functioning so that we can be more in line with Gabriel's truth, divine truth, and more in line with Aphrodite's love, divine love. Well, I wanted to start out before we get into speaking with our wonderful friends and guests, Nick Curto and Gerald T. Farley. Would like to offer a Thanksgiving prayer, and I hope everyone throughout the world had a wonderful Thanksgiving, thanking God and all the wonderful celestials that we have for everything that we have. Diane and I last night, we stood in front of our altar, and we thanked the gods for everything we have, and we hope that they will continue to help us and transform our world. Here's our Thanksgiving prayer, and this was sent to us by a really good friend of ours. Her name is Moira, and also Diane's brother, Frank. Our Thanksgiving prayer. Good and gracious God, we come before you today united with all who give you thanks and praise. Fill us with gratitude for your many blessings, both physical and spiritual. We thank you in particular this day for the gifts of food and family. Bless this food, Lord, that it may nourish our bodies. Bless our family, especially those who can't be with us today. Also today we remember those of our family who have gone to be with you. Grant us your spiritual blessings and help us pray daily for the grace to serve you in response to your bountiful gifts to us. Bless all who serve you throughout the world. We pray this in the name of Jesus, your Son, our Lord, who gives all things freely according to our needs. Continue to bless us and give us your peace. Amen.
Amen.
And with that, I want to follow that prayer with another prayer that was given to me by a wonderful friend, Gerald T. Farley, who is also on this show tonight. He gave me a poem called The Prayer and asked me to set it to music, which I did. And I took the prayer kind of in a poem form from Gerald. And I put a little refrain in there for my musical setting. One World United is the refrain. So the way that I worked it is the title is The Prayer in parentheses, One World United. And I'm happy to share it with Gerald and with everyone listening tonight and with the world, because we are One World United. Here we go. We are one global family, although our skins are of many colors, our souls are all the same color. One world united, one world united. We pray for peace and healing of our planet Earth. Peace for all nations, peace for our communities, and peace within ourselves. One world united, one world united, one world united, one world united. As we join as one across the world, let us connect heart, mind, consciousness, heart, mind, consciousness. Through our diversity, we recognize unity. Through our compassion, we recognize peace. One world united, one world united. Love is the power to transform our world. Let us expand out through our heart, mind, consciousness. Now. One world united, 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 one world united. The prayer.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Words by Gerald T. Farley. Well, Gerald, I hope you enjoy the CDs that we sent you. Share them with your friends, and I know 14 more are coming through the mail.
Oh, wow. Well, Carol is excited about it because, quite frankly, she listens to it all day long. It is a beautiful piece of music, and we recognize the genius behind it, and I'm not saying that lightly.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Gerald. Well, your poem is so appropriate, you know, for Thanksgiving and also for, you know, the upcoming holiday season, for Christmas and the upcoming holiday season, you know, because, you know, we celebrate the light that is in the darkness. We celebrate that hope, you know, of a brilliant future. And the sixth revelation, that's one of our duties and one of our goals is to express that hope of a wonderful future together, one world united, celestials and humans together, creating a wonderful place and a wonderful, you know, atmosphere for everyone to have a great life.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome there, Gerald. So we're going to bring in our wonderful friend here, Nick Curto. And Nick is going to tell us about Thanksgiving and about a wonderful trip that he had. I'm going to have Diane introduce Nick.
Hi, Nick.
Hey. Hi, Diane. Good to be here. Yeah.
Yes. I'm so happy that you are joining us, and I'm so excited to hear about your trip to Plymouth Rock. And this is something that is so special for all of us, for all Americans especially, to hear. So let's hear it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Diane and Michael. And Michael, I love your new song. And you know what? I was thinking, besides your version, I would also like to hear that exact same song with the melody and the lyrics by a gospel choir. I think that is for a gospel choir to sing that. And I just want to put that little seed in the ground there and say, think about that, because if you know a gospel choir that would probably take this and record it, I think there's huge potential for that also, both your version as well as that. So I just wanted to put my two cents in with that. But congratulations, both of you. Wonderful.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you so much.
Now, we'll talk about Plymouth Rock and Plymouth, Massachusetts, located on Cape Cod. And as you know, I live in Manhattan, on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And my best friend, John, suggested a couple of weeks before Thanksgiving, this was a few years ago, instead of cooking a Thanksgiving traditional meal, which we normally do, why don't we visit Massachusetts and go to Plymouth Rock? And I thought, that's a great idea. I never thought of actually doing that. So we prepared, we went, took a little research about what was there. We got on a Peter Pan bus, which is a local Massachusetts bus company headquartered in Springfield, Mass, where I was born. We got went to Port Authority, got that bus, and it took us to Boston. And then we switched in Boston to a local bus that would stop at Plymouth, where we got off, and I had rented a little hotel very, very close, within walking distance of Plymouth Rock. And so there we were, had something to eat, went to bed early, woke up. It was fairly dark. It was raining a little bit, and it was very cloudy that morning of Thanksgiving, and got dressed, went out, and about a short walk, there it was, Plymouth Rock. And there's a monument there. It's all open air. But the reason they put the pillars around it in kind of like a cage system was because many people were going to Plymouth Rock when they didn't have the monument and chipping a piece of Plymouth Rock to take home with them as a souvenir. But as you can imagine, that would be, in time, there wouldn't be any Plymouth Rock left. So they did this really beautiful monument to it, which would protect the rock. The ocean still splashes where the rock is on the beach. So anyhow, I walked towards that in this dark morning, early morning. It was about like 7, 8 o'clock. It was still very, very dark and cloudy. And as I approached the monument to Plymouth Rock, I saw something very unexpected, which was a large Indian tent perched right there beside Plymouth Rock Monument. And I thought, what in the world? I never knew anything like that was here. So I approached that tent, and I was hearing a man inside who turned out to be from the Wampanoag Indian tribe, which is the local Indian tribe in that area. They've been there for thousands of years. And he was chanting. And he had an incense burning and an eagle feather. And he was fanning that incense smoke up into the air of the teepee. So I realized that he was doing a chanting prayer, an Indian prayer. And I just stood very quietly at the entrance to that teepee. And eventually he gazed over and saw me standing there, and he was very quiet, and there was a moment of total silence, and then I said, would it be possible for me to pray with you? So he understood that I knew what he was doing, and he said, please come in. So I did, and I did my silent prayer as he was continuing to do his. And when it was over, we went out of the tent, and he said that this is a day, Thanksgiving, which is also a sad day for my tribe and the Indian nation, because we lost so many people through the plague and all that and around this time. So he also said, and we also, here it comes, won a lawsuit. I said, really? What kind of lawsuit was that? And he said, well, the major museum in Plymouth depicts my tribe and our culture as really very, shall I say, criminal in some ways and very disrespectful to who we really are. And so we decided that we would try to get the truth out. So we did a lawsuit, and we've been in court, and I am very happy to say that we won. And now the books and the museum will be telling the truthful story of my tribe and what we did during that time and beyond. And I thought that was very, very interesting. And he also told me that every Thanksgiving, a lot of the Indians assemble in Plymouth, and they do that because of what I just told you, that it's a remembrance of the tribe and also of the thousands of Indians that were lost during that time. Now, also, we found out that Plymouth Rock, there's in a walking distance, is called Plymouth Plantation, and that is a depiction of the village where the English set up and built homes, little homes out of the lumber, and they brought things from England and the other areas that they came from, and they made a little village, and we were welcome to go take a look. And there are people, historians, who staff each of the homes there, these little homes. It's a dirt road, and you go knock at the door, and the people there, when the tourists are in the park, it's kind of a park, they'll be who the people were that lived in that home. So they're depicting that if there were, say, four or five children, those four or five children, actors, I guess, would be there, and they would talk in that language of the day. And you could ask them questions about what are you planting in your garden or whatever, and they would answer you as the people of that time. How amazing is that?
Are you talking about they're speaking English, right?
Well, yeah, but it's English from the 1620s.
Yeah, right. What about the accents? Did they have like accents, or was it just the words and the grammar from the language?
Good question, Michael. And the accents were absolutely there. So there were some words that you had a little bit of time trying to find out exactly what they were saying, because of course that's a long time ago, 400 years. And so the language has changed, but it was so amazing to be in like a time warp and walk on that street and see the people in their gardens, and they had axes chopping wood. It was an amazing treat to be there, and I highly recommend Plymouth Plantation. You can find that on the internet. And then we found out that we could go to a dinner in a nearby, very large modern facility. And they were serving three different kinds of Thanksgiving dinner that day. And we thought, well, that's fantastic. Let's do that. And we got there, and this is so interesting. They offered three different kinds of menus. And the place would have held a couple hundred people, so it was very large. And the tickets were almost sold out at that point. And they had three different selections. And listen to this. The first one was a traditional Thanksgiving dinner, American style, and that is everything that we all know and have. But there was another one, and it was called the First Thanksgiving in Plymouth, and that had very interesting dishes, foods from the First Thanksgiving. One of the things that they ate at the First Thanksgiving was eel. Eel was plentiful in that area, dried fruit, lobster. They had a kind of a biscuit that was made from cornmeal, and they had that was made with corn and milk and water and butter, and they were like different kinds of crackers and things like that. Of course, maize, which was corn, and here's the interesting thing: they hollowed out pumpkins and they served the soup and things in the pumpkins as a like a bowl. They used little pumpkins as a bowl, and they put the food in the pumpkins. That's interesting. Also, fowl, duck, geese, they had fish. They had codfish, of course, and clams, and also they had deer. And that went on not for one day, but for 3 days. It was 3 days of celebration. And they were getting ready, of course, for the very harsh winter, very cold, harsh winter that they were facing. Now, one other thing that you might be interested in is that the Mayflower is Mayflower 2 is also there, and you can board it, and it's an exact replica of the Mayflower that came over with the Pilgrims. And that's another thing you cannot miss. Definitely go on that ship and see what it was like to go across the huge Atlantic Ocean in that little sailing ship. It was amazing. And another thing they told me is that 74 men and 28 women were on that ship. And after the first winter, 44 of those people died. So it ended up that with 102 people and 44 had passed on, they really had 58 people, 58 pilgrims at the Thanksgiving. And of course, the Wampanoag Indians were there too. So very interesting things. And one last thing is that the third choice on the menu that Thanksgiving Day was a Victorian Thanksgiving. And of course, the Victorians they had money. They could spend it on quail and cakes and coffee and cheese and mince pie, oysters, different kinds of fish, and so forth. So there were those three different selections were on the menu. We opt out for the traditional, you know, cranberries and turkey and stuffing and potatoes and corn. So we did that. But anyhow, I just want to share that with you guys. It was an amazing, amazing treat to be there. And I highly recommend that if you're in the area around Thanksgiving, going to Plymouth Rock and Plymouth Plantation is a must.
All right, and watch out for the eel there.
Yeah, that doesn't really make my mouth water, Michael and Diane and Gerald. I don't know what you think, but I think I'm going to pass on that.
Yeah. Well,
after that description, Nick, it's like we were there. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Oh, you're more than welcome. I just had such a good time there, and it was so worth the journey. And we went back to Manhattan the next day, but it was such an amazing adventure. And if you're ever in the area, that is something to definitely take a look at.
Well, thank you so much, Nick, for that. Yeah, it was as if we were just, we were there, and going on the Mayflower, it must have been incredible.
You pinch yourself, Michael. You absolutely pinch yourself because it doesn't take much to realize that you're walking in the same space. You're seeing where they slept and where they, the little place where they ate, and how really crowded and cramped it was. This little fragile, by our standards, a fragile little boat going across the Atlantic Ocean and landing in the new world. It's really quite something.
Yeah. Well, thank you again, Nick. And we're constantly, especially around Thanksgiving, we constantly remind our son, Alec, whenever he complains about something, we say, you know, like having to do work or a big workload or something at school, you know, we say, think of the Pilgrims, man. they had guts. They had it. Yeah, that's all I can say. But thanks again, Nick. And I wanted to transition to Diane, who's going to add a little bit there to that, Nick, to the story of the Pilgrims. On Thanksgiving Day, Diane and I and Alex were around the table. We were about to have, our dinner. And Diane read some of the history of the Pilgrims, and she came up with some interesting facts, too, in that history, which I'm going to have her share right now. So here is Diane, and she's going to tell us a little bit more about the Pilgrims and what they had to go through and just how brave and how incredible they were. And eventually they set up this beautiful melting pot of America, one world united, definitely. We have people from all over the world here who have come to realize a dream in America. So here's Diane.
Thank you, Michael, and thank you, Nick. I'm ready to go. I'm really ready to go. I love anywhere that's historical. I still haven't been to Williamsburg either, and I want to go there. But I wanted to give just a few facts about the Pilgrims because it is interesting. I just looked it up really just for Alexander and for Michael on Thanksgiving, but I decided to share it with you guys too. And this is what I found out. So it says that the Pilgrims were British religious reformers. So they really were British. And after migrating to Holland, so I guess they all got together in England and then went to Holland in 1609. But they also went with some colonists who did not share their religious views. They immigrated to America in the Mayflower, and yes, I would love to see the Mayflower. That would be wonderful. I know Michael would too. In 1620, so that's where they went and set up the Plymouth Colony in Massachusetts. Their main leaders were William Brewster and William Bradford. Now, I've heard of William Bradford, but I haven't heard of Brewster that much. The Plymouth Colony, which never had a charter, was merged with the Massachusetts Bay Colony in 1691. That's quite a bit later than 1620 when they set out. Now, it says here, chief among the Plymouth historical sites is, of course, Plymouth Rock, and that's what, Nick, you were telling us about, that I wish I could go see. And I did see a picture of the beautiful columns that surround the rock in my book, and they looked like they were Greek columns. I thought that was very interesting. I don't know if you noticed it or felt that way, but I would say those look like Greek columns around it. And above the rock, they say, is Cole's Hill. Now, that's the burial place of nearly one half of the Mayflower passengers who died. Now, you were talking about that, saying that about 74 men, 28 women, and 44 died. So they're saying that these people who died during the trip and the first hard winter were buried secretly. This is what's kind of interesting. They say that what they did is they buried those people secretly and then planted corn on top of them, because they didn't want the Indians to realize how small their number had gotten and how feeble that the colony had really become. 44 dying out of 102, that's a big number. There is a sarcophagus. I don't know if you saw that, Nick. It says it contains the remains of many of the settlers that died. And there's a statue of, it's Massasoit, and he's the friend of the Pilgrims, the Indian friend. Now, in my books, they all say that every Indian there was friendly during that particular arrival. I don't know if there's anything contradictory about that, but that's what the books that I've read. Now, there was one more thing I wanted to add about these Pilgrims. The Pilgrims were an outgrowth of the British Puritans. Now, there's a difference between Puritans and Pilgrims. So here we go. The Puritans, and that means comes from pure, were members of the Church of England and wished to purify it. So they were members of the Church of England. Now, the Pilgrims were too. They came out of the Church of England too. But they called themselves separatists, and they withdrew from the Church of England, and they tried to organize independent, self-governing churches. So the Pilgrims, and they're different from the Puritans, they're the ones who followed more of a radical teaching, and that was of Robert Brown. Now, I've heard of Robert Brown, but I'm going to get my books out and start finding out exactly what he was talking about. This was his life was from 1550 to 1633, so he's pretty much one that probably stirred up that group of Pilgrims that arrived. The only other thing I wanted to mention before I get off here is that it was interesting hearing about the dinners that they served there at Plymouth Rock. But, you know, nobody talks about it, but we're going to talk about it, because the Worldwide Religion of Love talks about it. And we've got some gods here that I want to tell everybody who's here before I go on. We've got Apollo that, see, I go upstairs and I ask him, who wants to come down and sit with us and be with us while we do this radio program? And here's the gods and celestials that wanted to come tonight. Apollo. Apollo is here. Thank you, Apollo. Love. Eros. Eros is here. And I thank you, Eros, for coming. We also have Hyperion, a rather new character in our celestial group. It's not that he has appeared just recently. He came a long time ago, but we haven't heard much about him, but we're going to. He's going to be big in our worldwide religion of love. Hyperion, thank you. We also have a rather new character, though, Father Diamond, and he is a Buddha from a solar system far, far away with his consort, Mother Ruby. And they have adopted us, and I do thank them sincerely for that. But I want to give our Thanksgiving dinner we had yesterday. We went outside, and it was a beautiful day, and I hope it was a nice day for all of you. I know we've got Gerald in Oregon, and we've got Hercules, and we've got Nick a little bit far away there, and I don't know how the weather was. But it was beautiful out here under the trees, and I wanted to give you my dinner menu, and this is because Nick suggested it. I really wasn't going to. I hadn't thought about it. But Nick said, no, you should give them your menu. And this menu is a part of the Worldwide Religion of Love because the Worldwide Religion of Love includes having meals like in the Garden of Eden, where we just have the fruit of the trees and the vine and the bushes. So here's our menu that was for yesterday. We started out with mango juice for our drink. We had tamales with either sauce, a really nice tamale sauce, and cheese on top. We had rice, and it was brown rice, really a nice brown rice. It's better to have brown, sorry to say that, but it's better. We had carrots, Brussels sprouts, asparagus, all in a nice dish with tofu. We had baked yams. Now, that's a traditional food for the holiday. We did have baked yams. And then we had for dessert fruit, papaya, and raspberries. But the main dessert of the meal was I always order every year a big tin of Bavarian gingerbread cookies and also the cakes that they make with the fruit cakes. So we had German cookies in the German tin, and we drank out of our German beer mugs. We don't drink beer, but but we love the mugs. We think they're so beautiful from Germany, from Bavaria. So that was our menu, and those were a few little historical facts for you, and I hope you enjoyed them.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you, Gerald. Thank you, Nick, so much. And here's Michael.
Oh, hey, does anybody have any questions about any of that? Or comments?
Yes. Can we come to dinner at some point?
You betcha.
I'm just hungry listening to it all.
I think you had, did we have tamales, Gerald, when you came? Yeah, I think we had tamales once, didn't we, when you
yes,
came down?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I put several in my pocket to take home with me.
There you go. Yeah, so we do it all vegetarian and everything, you know. So and the tofu's really good, and the veggies and the rice and everything. But you guys have to try the Bavarian cookies sometime. They're called Lebkuchen in German. It's love is Liebe or Leb. And then Kuchen is cookies, so they're called love cookies. But they're, you know, mostly gingerbread, and there's coconut and hazelnut. But we get them through a catalog, and the company is called Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-D-T, that makes this particular, little cookie assortment. But it comes in a tin And on the tin, they usually have these landscapes of, you know, Bavarian towns and things. And there's a castle on this particular one for this year. But you guys should try them sometime. They're really delish.
I just want to say something. Nick, you told me that you have a store in New York right near you that sells all these beautiful Bavarian things, right? Are you there? Nick? Is he gone?
Hercules?
Yes, you're still there.
Is Nick there?
Hercules, can you hear me?
Yeah, I am.
Yes. Can you hear me, Diane?
Oh, good, yes.
Right.
I live in
Yorkville. Yorkville is an area where a lot of immigrants from among other places, Germany, came and set up their first homes in Yorkville. So Yorkville was, for many years, very, very heavily German. Now, because it's now 2023 almost, a lot of that has gone, but there's still a lot of little shops. And what you're referring to, and I highly recommend it, it's on 2nd Avenue between 86th and 85th Street, which is one block from where I live. And it's a wonderful restaurant beside it, Lohenbräu, which has got traditional German food. And this store has exactly what you're saying. There's all kinds of cookies and desserts from Germany, and it goes on and on. I mean, you would be dazzled by the variety that's there. So it's a very loved and respected store that's there. They've been there for over 120 years. It's a family-owned store. And I also read that they were offered millions and millions of dollars if they would sell that property and that store, because a land developer wanted to make high-rise apartment building there. And they said, no way. We love our store. It's tradition for our family. And there's no way in the world we're going to sell, which I cheer them on for that.
Yeah, I just want to mention, too, that these tins of cookies are not like a little 1 foot by 1 foot. These are great big tins. How big would you say, Michael?
About 2.5 feet long.
I don't think they're
really
quite that big, but they're quite big. And they do just have beautiful engraved, they are pretty big, but they have beautiful engraving and beautiful designs on the top. This last one had the beautiful castle that was there in Bavaria since 1050. So that's been there a long, long time, this castle.
Wow. Well, you know, tomorrow Saturday, I'm going to go to that store and see if they carry that particular brand. It sounds amazing.
Schmidt.
It's Schmidt. Yes, yeah, Schmidt. And then
Schmidt,
the,
right.
And then you said that the Bavarian beautiful beer steins they had in the window. Now, that's what we collect and we use during our wonderful service. And some of the reproductions I have are from Williamsburg, and one I do have is from the 1600s, and some of the silver spoons, they aren't silver, they're just pewter, you know, the pewter tankards. But some of the ones
right.
I have are reproductions from that period of time. So anyway, it's a really fun time to, I'd love to explore that store, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll see if they have a catalog or something from the store. If they do, I'll send it to you.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
That'd be fabulous.
Great.
Hail Hyperion and Thea, God and Goddess of the light, spiritual light. Well, another song that I've written that I'm going to be publishing very, very soon in honor of Hyperion and Thea is called Hail Hyperion and Thea. The sixth revelation, as I said at the beginning of our show tonight, is tasked with, giving a message of hope and of light to humanity. And who better than Hyperion and Thea, God and Goddess of the Light? Before we talk to our wonderful friend Gerald, I'd like to offer a little bit of Hail Hyperion and Thea. Just have to switch hands. Here we go.
Hail Hyperion and Thea, God and Goddess of the Light, spiritual light. hail Hyperion and Thea, in the scene of the new world of light to be. Hyperion, sun behind the sun, life for everyone above the earth, making a new rebirth in glory. Hail Hyperion and Thea, god and goddess of the light, spiritual light. Hail Hyperion and Thea, king and queen of the new world of light to be. You'll see. Hail Thea, beauty shining down, beauty all around in colors, giving us joy and birth, new heaven and earth. Hail Hyperion and Thea, god and goddess of the light, spiritual light. Hail Hyperion and Thea, king and queen of the new world of light to be. Future looks bright for you and me, Pan and Thea.
Hail. Beautifully done, Michael.
Thank you, friend Gerald. And
very
Gerald,
nice, Michael.
Thank you. Thanks. Oh, I'm almost done, guys, with the I'm almost done with the vocal. I've been working with the working vocal, but I've just recorded the final vocal. Have to edit it a little bit, and I'm going to share it with you guys. I'll send you some a CD of that one, so it'll be coming fairly soon.
That would be great. Thank you.
Well, Gerald, you are here, and you know, the Celestials tell us that we have a really bright future, and that there are some actual really good, hopeful changes coming fairly soon with Hyperion and Thea and the other Celestials, and you, of course, Gerald, are a bringer of God's light. Please share with us what you have to share with us.
Thank you, Michael and Diane and Nick and Hercules. Two nights ago, I received an email asking for from Connecting Consciousness, asking for more details about the Christ Michael Schools, the Quantum Healing Centers, the Offices of Peace, and the community gardens that surround communities that are a humanitarian project worldwide. I explained to them that the board of directors who I received information from and who I would love to have, although there's been no confirmation at this point because there's no grant fund. There's no funding available at this point. However, it's really a very positive note that they are getting ready to look at all of these projects. And this is a huge worldwide project that's free of all costs to everyone, and including the housing, the food, everything, and all of the health and health processes, the healing processes from our quantum healing centers. They're all free, and everything will be open source. So right the same night after that, here's the message that came in. And it's not too long, only a few minutes, but it's from the 9D Arcturian Council. And I had asked that the members of the board of directors would be two Pleiadians, two Andromedans, and two Arcturians to begin with, along with myself. And this message came in. Greetings. We are the Arcturian Council. We're pleased to connect with all of you. We have been chosen by all of the other ninth dimensional collectives in the galaxy to be the ones who announce to all of you that you have been chosen to be the ones to spearhead a movement there on Earth that will result in the shaking up of your society. Now, you are not going to do this by protesting, and you're not going to do it by vandalizing property. You're not even going to do it by posting or making videos or the internet. You're going to spearhead a movement that will shake your systems to the core by coming together as an awakened collective with your vision of a better tomorrow. You are not there to simply complain about the inequities of life on Earth and how very unfairly society has been set up to favor the few. You are the ones who were chosen before you were even born to go forth and have enough awareness to see that there are problems in your society and to come up with solutions that have nothing to do with tearing down the existing system in place. Your solutions will come from your ability to focus and to focus with the intention of creating a society that works for everyone. We know that many of you have attempted to do just that on a smaller scale by creating an intentional community, but the vision that you hold for all of humankind is what really matters in this endeavor. And since we know every single one of you who will receive this transmission, we want you to know that we are referring to you as an individual, as well as the collective you are part of, which is comprised of awakened souls. Now is not the time to think of yourself, that everyone also receiving the message will carry the weight and do the focusing. We are calling on you, and this is finally the last paragraph, we are calling on you as the ones who were chosen by our colleagues to make this happen. And we want you to feel that you have the power to do this simply by holding that intention, focusing and maintaining the vibration of the desire that you have for a better society for all. It is our goal, and it always has been our goal, to empower you, to emphasize your strength, your abilities, and the knowing that we have that you are the ones to lead humanity in so many pivotal ways. You still have time there in the fourth and fifth dimensions to bring about the massive changes that you want to see. So please do not wait around for something or someone to care of it for you, but rather stretch those muscles that you have, the muscles that give you the right and permission to create entire worlds, entire star systems, and entire galaxies, and show all of us here in the ninth dimension who are watching what you are capable of with just a little bit of focus and attention on what you want to see outside of you in the society that you are part of. We are the Arcturian Council, and we have enjoyed connecting with you. Since I don't believe in accidents, that was definitely synchronicity. Thank you.
Yes,
Jerry. Wow.
Fantastic.
Wow. Absolutely takes your breath away.
It did ours. Carol sitting here with me, and it blew us away. It changed the world.
It absolutely
does.
It's so positive. So positive, so loving, and so caring. And it's what we need, absolutely. And it's saying, go ahead, proceed, because you know where you need to be, and now's the time, and you're the people to do it. I totally embrace that thought. Gerald, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I appreciate
thank
that
you.
Aspect. I appreciate that too, Gerald, that, you know, we are empowered. Each individual is empowered to make the change, you know. I wanted to ask you a question. You know, there are a number of people, there are a number of people that I run across every day in my job that are really trying, you know what I mean? I mean, they're really reaching out to others to try and spread love, to support others. What do you say... You know, how is the Arcturian Council and the Celestials that we all talk about in the many spiritual traditions that we encounter and we connect with? What do you say to the normal person who just kind of doesn't go to church? They just kind of float along in kind of a third dimensional way. You know, what do we say to them, Gerald, to help them like? Open up or start this focus, this individual path to creating this future, this new future?
That is a great question, Michael. Thank you for it. Mm-hmm. The truth is that right now we live in what the Celestials are calling the simultaneous timeline on planet Earth between third and fourth and fifth dimensions. And how they described it is it kind of looks like a fruit salad. And what Carol and I are finding is, one, we don't go out and talk to people at all. All we concentrate on is between ourselves, and we get messages like this daily, literally. They're talking to us all the time, the Celestials, to enable us. And so as far as the ones who we get the information from, mostly the Pleiadians, the Andromedans, and the Arcturians, but there are 25th and 23rd dimensional entities, the Argosians and the Siriusians, who are contacting us constantly as well. They're not embodied. What they all say is, raise your vibrational frequency. You cannot go out and engage with people who are still choosing to live in third dimensional reality, because everyone has their free will choice. And that's the key there to what you're asking, Michael, is that all of these Celestials are constantly reminding us to enable everyone's free will choice. And the only time...
I hate to interrupt, but we have 5 minutes or so.
Five minutes,
time.
Okay. I'll, I'll hurry it up. I'm almost finished. Thank you, Hercules.
You're welcome.
And in that scenario, Carol and I are finding that people are approaching us. And, we can't say why. We don't know why. But they're approaching us, and they're starting to ask us the kinds of questions that, like, how do you get to where you guys are? Because they see it, and they feel it. So that's really the best way I can answer that, is for all of us to raise our vibrational frequency, and they will come. It's like the field of dreams.
Yeah, yeah.
Rebuild it, they will come.
Yeah.
And that's how we know it works,
mm-hmm.
Michael. And I've got to say, in just a few minutes, Carol listens to that magnificent piece of music that you sent. It's going to go, I'm telling you, it's going to go viral. I'm glad you're sending more copies, because she's getting it out to the four corners of the planet, but everybody in her family, and I could go on and on about it, and I'm giving it to Connecting Consciousness and another group here that it's going to go viral, Michael.
I'm going to send a copy to you, Hercules, and to you, Nick, too, and you guys can share it also. And if you wanted to, maybe play it on one of the radio programs, Hercules, that would be wonderful.
Sure, just let me know what you want to play and play it.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. And, hey, here we go. We're to the end here, but I wanted to let you know that we do give thanks for you guys, because Hercules and Nick and Gerald and Carol, you all are bringers of the light, and that's and obviously the gods are working through you all, and Athena too, of course. And I don't know if you have your little doggy still, Hercules, but I'm sure he brings you guys joy. But all right, so here we go. We're going to get contact information from our friends here. Let's give you mine really quick. We are Michael and Diane Duncan, and that's the name of our YouTube channel, Michael and Diane Duncan, two N's for Diane, D-U-N-K-I-N. We have over 104, 106 videos of our team meetings, celestial team meetings, and our songs. And we're going to be putting up a couple new videos that have to do with the coming of Hyperion and Theia as the new rulers in 2023 of our planet Earth, giving more light. Also, Michael Duncan 1@hotmail.com is our email, and also we're on streaming sites and download sites for our songs and our music. Just type in the search Reverend Michael Duncan. And how about you, Nick? Contact information for you.
Okay, real quick, Nick, and that is NICKNYNY1, and that's the numeral 1@gmail.com. And I'd love to hear from you.
All right. And what about Disclosure Network?
Disclosure, the website is dnny.info, dnny.info, and that stands for Disclosure Network New York.
All right. Thank you, Nick. And Gerald, how do we get a hold of you?
The email is capital M as in Mary or Mother, Gerald T. Farley, all lowercase, @proton.pro. That's Peter Robert Ocean, Tom Ocean, Nora, proton.m as in Mary, E as in Edward. Phone number is 503-385-8480. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, guys. And Hercules, do you have anything to add?
Nope. Just thank you all. Wonderful show. And I look forward to speaking with all of you again soon. And thanks to everybody who tuned in tonight or who will be listening to us later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thanks again, everybody.
Thanks, Hercules. God bless you.
Much love to everybody. Much love.
You all.
God bless.